Welcome to the Wellness and Healthy Lifestyle Show on your VOCM. Now here's your host, Dr. Mike Wall.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Wall. Well, today we're diving into the world of science that is both accessible and available for public consumption. And that was the recent Soapbox Science event held at the Farmers Market. Now, Soapbox Science is a novel public outreach platform for promoting women and non-binary scientists and the science they do. Their events transform public areas into an arena for public learning and scientific debate, like our St. John's Farmers Market. They follow the format of London Hyde Park's Speaker's Corner, which is historically an arena for public debate. The Soapbox Science events want everybody to have the opportunity to enjoy, to learn from, heckle, question, probe, interact with, and be inspired by some of our leading scientists. There's no middle person, no PowerPoint slide, no amphitheater. Just remarkable women and non-binary scientists who are there to amaze you with their latest discoveries and to answer the science questions you may have about their topics. The St. John's Soapbox Science event took place on September 4th, and I had the opportunity to interview four of the 11 scientists under the microscope. Joining me to tell us more about the event is Dr. Sarah Sauvé, who's a postdoctoral researcher at Memorial University, and she's the brains behind this year's event. Let's hear more about Soapbox Science. Hi, Dr. Sauvé. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. You can call me Sarah.
Okay, perfect. You can call me Mike. Sarah, we are talking about the Soapbox Science event that's being held at the Farmers Market. Tell me about that. You're one of the organizers, correct?
Yeah, I am. So Soapbox Science is an outreach platform. It was founded in the UK in 2011, and it has two primary goals. The first one is to promote women in science, and the second one is to bring science directly to the public. So we do that by literally putting women on soapboxes in public places. And we've chosen here to do it at the Farmers Market.
Right. And so tell me a little bit about the event, how it works. So if I'm at the market, how do I listen to these different scientists tell me about their stuff?
Yeah, so it's going to be four soapboxes at any given time. So we're going for 3 hours. I'd say we have four speakers per hour for 3 hours to make up all the 12. And so they're just going to be standing on their soapboxes, and you can approach anyone that you're interested in speaking to. It's very informal. They'll be posted throughout the market outdoors. We hope there's no rain.
Okay. Well, that's really interesting, because I've looked at the list of some of your speakers. I know some of them personally, and I'm really interested in a lot of their work. And we're going to be talking to three of them today in this episode. But tell me about who's going to be presenting and what people could potentially tune in or go and talk to people about if they were at the market.
All right, so we have 11 speakers actually coming. One unfortunately had to drop out at the last minute, but that's okay. So our 11 speakers are, first we have Yellow Martin. She's a research student at MUN, and she's going to talk about, is love in the air? She's going to talk about pheromones and attraction, which should be super interesting. We have Dr. Sukhinder Chima, who's a professor at MUN. She's going to be talking about why you are what your mother ate during pregnancy. We have Dr. Janet Andronowski, who's a forensic anthropologist at Memorial and also works at the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner. And she's going to be talking about bones, crimes, and careers, the fundamentals of forensic anthropology. Hannah Wallace is a PhD candidate at MUN, and she's going to be talking about viruses. Marissa Dussault is a research student also at MUN. Her talk is called She Sells Seashells by the Seashore, Studying Shells from an Archaeological Science Perspective. We have Katya Kochvar, who's a research student as well at MUN, and she's going to be talking about puffins. Why are puffins so pretty? Oh, I know Katya from a book club at the Social Justice Cooperative. I know that she spent her summer collecting this data, so it should be really fun to find out what she discovered. Thanks. We also have Leanne Alwood-Newhook, who's a pediatrician and associate prof at MUN, who's going to be talking about improving children's health through research. Sydney Collins is a PhD candidate at MUN, and she's going to be talking about big risks for tiny seabirds in the North Atlantic. Dr. Sevtap Savas is an associate prof at MUN, and she's going to be talking about cancer. Shriyosi Sarkar is a PhD candidate at MUN, and she's going to be talking about the first step to therapeutics. And last but not least, we have Sue Ziegler, who's a professor and Canada Research Chair at MUN. She's going to be talking about where does the 50% discount on our CO2 emissions come from. She's going to be talking about carbon sinks in the boreal forest ecosystem, I believe.
That's excellent. I've actually know quite a few of those people myself. I work with them. And also I've had Dr. Awesome. Andronowski, for example, on the show. Very, very interesting for anybody who's looking to learn something new, because I guarantee people will learn a lot of new stuff. Tell me about why the Soapbox Science program or event was created. It was to break down some barriers, correct?
Yeah. So there's a lot of discrimination in science. There's a lot of inequality in gender representation, particularly in the STEM fields, so science, technology, engineering, and medicine. And so this was founded with the idea of like, look, we belong here. Let's show that we do. So let's put ourselves in public places and interact with the public to show that women can be scientists and change that image that all people have, right? Of like the old man with the crazy hair and the lab coat. Like, that's not what a scientist is anymore. Right. It's a lot more diverse than that.
And so that prompted you as a researcher yourself. We've actually chatted before because you do a lot of research in music and the brain. Was that something that you've actually witnessed in your career? Was that there aren't a lot of opportunities or as many opportunities for women in research?
It's actually the opposite for me. I've been incredibly lucky to not have felt any overt discrimination against me in my career so far. And my field is pretty new. And I think that's a big reason why we have, it feels decent gender parity. I don't know the statistics, to be honest, but there are many women PIs, there are many senior researchers who are women. Mm-hmm. So my impetus for doing this was really to help give that opportunity to other women.
Mm. And maybe in other fields that don't have that aren't quite as new and they may have more established people.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So a question, do you have any statistics on what the ratio is of male and female professors at Memorial University, for example?
I do actually. We published an article in the Mon Gazette about the leaky pipeline. And we have the Newfoundland and Labrador. Stats Canada reports 195 male and only 90 female full-time professors in 2019 and 2020. And at MUN, out of 1,112 permanent faculty, 41.7% are women. Mm-hmm. But that's for the whole university, right? And they don't have the stats per department. And I think it would be different because you have things, humanities generally have more women, whereas STEM have less. And so we get with 40% of women overall is totally acceptable, right? Like 60-40 is a good ratio to have. Mm-hmm. The thing is, it's different when it comes to the specific fields.
Right. That makes sense. I'm sure that there's some that are dominated by different genders. How did you go about finding participants? Did you ask people directly or did they have to apply? And what was their general response when they were asked to be involved?
Yeah. So there's a call for speakers that goes out internationally. So this is coordinated by a central office in the UK, and there are events all around the world, and they can happen anytime between April and October. And so the call for speakers is coordinated centrally, and people apply to be a speaker. And when the deadline comes, the speaker list gets sent to us, and we choose our 12 speakers locally. We had 13 applicants this year, which is really great.
Excellent. So what do you hope the people that are attending will get out of this? Do you think that there's going to be young people that will be inspired by seeing these types of talks, meeting these people?
That's the hope. Yeah. I think it would be great for kids to see women in these positions. I think we need more role models in science. Like I mentioned, there's a leaky pipeline. So what happens is that, this is based on UK statistics, we have gender parity in most of the sciences at like the high school level. Undergrad is getting there, but it's as soon as it hits postdoc and then associate prof and professor and everything above that, that's when the gender parity really drops and you end up from 60-40 to 90-10 in favor of men. And so we're really missing those women in role model positions. Mm-hmm. So we want to just show that it's possible and give a chance for people to interact with women at different levels of their career, from different places, right? We have people from different places around the world who have chosen to make their homes here at MUN. And yeah, show that diversity and all the different topics that you can study. There are so many things that you can study in science. It's really exciting.
It is. And you can make your own topic. And that's what people don't realize sometimes is when they get to the level, for example, you're doing a postdoc right now, you get to design what you want to study. Is there any advice you'd have for young researchers coming up to follow in sort of the path that you've been able to help forge?
Yeah, for me, it was really important to look up the people I wanted to work with and reach out to them early. And so the most important thing in your graduate work is who your supervisor is. It's not about the school. It's not about the program. It's about your supervisor, because you're going to be spending, if you're in North America, 4 years with them. So you want to make sure that you can have a good relationship and it's someone that you're really going to work with well. And I set myself up for my postdoc about 3 years before I started. I got in touch with Dr. Zendel and was like, hey, I want to do a postdoc. What do you think? And just kept following up and kept following up to the point where, you know, I have a job here now. And so I like to think ahead, plan, and place myself in a position where I will be the most likely to be successful for what I want.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for organizing this fantastic event. I'm sure everybody who attends will learn something new, and that's the whole point of what we do in education.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for taking time to this interview.
That was Dr. Sarah Sove from the recent Soapbox Science event. When we come back, we'll talk with Dr. Sukhinder Cheema, who's a full professor in biochemistry and has an amazing career studying how the foods we eat impact our health. We'll be right back after the break.
Days on VOCM. It's Open Line with your host, Patty Daly. Join the conversation each morning from 9 a.m. to noon on your VOCM. We get people talking.
Welcome back. I'm joined now by Dr. Sukhinder Cheema, who's a full professor in the Faculty of Biochemistry and is cross-appointed to the Faculty of Medicine. She studies how nutrients, specifically dietary fats and fatty acids, regulate metabolic pathways to prevent us from getting cardiovascular disease, obesity and diabetes, and maintain a healthy brain. Let's check in with her and find out more about her presentation and get some advice for the next generation of female scientists. Hi, Dr. Cheema. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mike, for inviting me to the show.
Well, I'm so glad I get a chance to talk to you because you are volunteering your time to be part of a really important event called Soapbox Science. Tell me about what you're going to be talking about at the event.
Oh, I'm very excited to talk about the event, Mike. So my name is Sukhinder Cheema. Just to give a little bit of background information, who I am. So I'm a full professor of nutritional biochemistry at Memorial University. I have been at Memorial for more than 22 years. So I am doing the topic for Soapbox Science event in St. John's this year, which is related to my own research that I'm doing at Memorial University. And the topic is why you are what your mother ate during pregnancy.
That is such an interesting topic. Can you explain what that really means? Because I think it's such an interesting thing for folks to hear.
Well, Mike, my PhD is in biochemistry, but then I did my postdoctoral training. It was a combination of biochemistry, nutrition, and molecular biology. So I combine all of these expertise towards my research at Memorial University. So one of the hottest topics about 22 years ago when I came to Memorial in the field of nutrition at that time was mother's nutrition during pregnancy and its impact on the future health of their children. But it wasn't really clear why and how mother's nutrition has an impact on the health of their newborn child in later life. So I was truly fascinated by this area of research, but the majority of research that was happening in this field at that time was related to malnourishment. So I asked the question, is malnourishment amongst pregnant or lactating women really a problem in the Western world? And when I reviewed the literature, it was pretty obvious that the problem in the Western world was not really malnourishment, but overnourishment and to the calories that come from fat. But one has to understand that there is not just one type of fat out there. There are different types of fat. So the quality of fat is very important. So with my background and my experience in fats and lipids, I got really interested to explore if the type of fat and also the amount of fat that the mothers consume during pregnancy will get passed on to the fetus, will affect the fetal development in a certain way to affect the health of that newborn in their later years. So I just want to emphasize that all of us need to keep in mind that nutrients regulate just about everything in our body to control our health. But to know that what mothers consume during pregnancy and that it has an effect on the developing fetus, and then the nutrients that the mothers consume can actually interact with developing fetus in terms of how their genes are regulated, and then how these genes will affect the regulation of body metabolism in later years is very interesting. One of the very interesting thing that I have learned from my own research at Memorial is that it's not that we just eat something and it goes into our body and it comes out, but whatever we put in our mouth has the capacity to interact with our genes, to modify the genes and to control our own health and also the development of the fetus and affecting the health of that newborn child in their later years.
That's unbelievable. And I don't think a lot of people think of it that way, that, you know, you literally are what you eat, but you're also what your parents eat or your mother ate during that period of time. How does information like this help shape the guidance that patients and, for example, new mothers are given? How does research like yours change how we counsel and educate expecting mothers when it comes to their diets and nutrition?
Oh, it's very important, Mike. Like as I mentioned before, that what we consume during pregnancy, it can change how the fetus grows and develops. Even the genes are modified in a certain way that puts the newborn at an increased risk of disease in later life. So it's absolutely very important for pregnant women, or even I shouldn't say just pregnant women, childbearing women, like women who are in their childbearing age, it's also important for them to think about nutrition, what they're consuming, because if they're thinking of becoming pregnant, you don't really know till you are in your, like you miss one period and only then you realize, oh, I may be pregnant, right? Mm-hmm. But fetus that is developing during that first month of pregnancy, mothers are providing the nutrients for that fetus to grow. So changes can happen even during that first month when women don't even realize that they are pregnant. So it's not that during pregnancy, it's if you're thinking of becoming pregnant, you have to think of what you're consuming. And then even after childbirth, women are encouraged to breastfeed, and whatever nutrients they are consuming, it will affect the breast milk composition as well. And they are giving this breast milk as food to their newborn. And even that can have an effect on the health of their newborn in terms of their future health when they become adult or in old age. So nutrition during pregnancy, during lactation, and also for women in their childbearing age is very important.
That's excellent advice. And that's really important for people to understand that. And this is why we're doing events like this. Now, you've been a successful researcher for your whole career. You're a full professor at the university. What advice would you give to young women researchers coming up and trying to follow in your footsteps?
Oh, Mike, that's a compliment. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Success comes with two things, I believe: your passion and hard work, dedication, right? So I think passion has to come first. I was very passionate about science, about research. And I think it's the passion that was the driving force behind my success. And then being a female, I had to work very hard, for sure. There is no doubt about that. So we know that women have to work much harder compared to men to be successful at any workplace. And I tell everyone that that is true, that women have to work harder. I'm a woman of color, and that adds another layer of challenge to become successful. I'm also a single parent. That adds another layer of complication to my situation. So to be successful, you just have to stay focused. You have to know your goals. You have to be passionate about what you are doing. You have to work hard and you have to be dedicated. And you just have to tell yourself, other women have done it and I can do it as well. So even if it's challenging, I mean, there is no field out there that does not provide you with challenges. So the message for female scientists is to remember that despite any external influences that might seek to exclude you from the field, you belong here. If that is what you want to do, then you should be doing it. Women have made huge contributions to the field of science decades ago, and it's up to us to continue their legacy. And if this is your passion, if this is your goal in life, then go do it.
That's right. And if anybody wants to see great examples of that at the Farmers Market this weekend, there'll be you and 11 other researchers out there sharing all your information, and people can hear about that passion in what you do. So the last thing I guess I'll ask you is, you know, why did you feel compelled to be involved in this? That you've got a lot of things you could be busy with, but you chose to be part of this event in particular. Why was that?
Great question, Mike, and thank you for asking that question. I have been involved in a lot of volunteer organizations where I share my science, my research findings with them, and I really honestly enjoy doing that because I believe in sharing science and scientific findings with public. So I'm involved in several other public outreach activities through Memorial University and also external volunteer organizations. And when I learned about Soapbox Science through social media, that it's a public outreach platform that promotes women in science, that was very exciting for me. So knowing that the field of science is very male dominated, fewer women in the field of science, and even fewer racialized women who are given opportunities to succeed, I was just very excited to reach out to Sarah and say, hey, Sarah, I really would like to do this Soapbox Science event and that highlights women in science. And I'm just so excited to be part of that event, Farmers Market.
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time today. I know you're really busy with the semester starting, but I think it's great that you could join me. So thank you very much.
Oh, great. Thank you, Mike. I will look forward to seeing you at the event to answer more questions. And thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk to you.
Well, that was Dr. Sukhinder Chima. When we come back, we'll meet with Dr. Leanne Newhook, who's a pediatrician, researcher, and professor. She'll share her topic on infant nutrition, as well as what she finds the most rewarding part of her career in science. We'll be right back.
Join us for On Target, 1 hour in which Linda Swain examines topics that mean the most to you. On Target, weekday afternoons at 1 on your VOCM.
Welcome back. Today we're talking about the recent Soapbox Science event, which features female and non-binary researchers sharing their expertise in a public forum. This year it was at the Farmers Market in St. John's. We're now joined by another speaker at the event, Dr. Leanne Newhook, who's a pediatrician, professor, and researcher. She shares some key points from her talk on infant nutrition, but also what her career in science has given her, both professionally and personally. Let's check it out. Hi, Dr. Newhook. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's going great. It's been a long time since I've seen you last, but I'm really glad you could join us today because we're talking about the Soapbox Science event. Tell me a bit about yourself and what topic you'll be covering during the event.
Sure. So my name is Leanne Newhook, and I am a general pediatrician at the Janeway Hospital. And I've been working at the Janeway now for over 20 years. So I was at the old Janeway at one point, and then we moved to the new Janeway, which is not the new Janeway anymore because we've been there for a while. Most of my work is actually seeing patients in the hospital or in the clinics, but I also have an appointment with the university, with the faculty of medicine. So the other part of my work is related to education. So, you know, teaching medical students and pediatric residents about pediatrics. And as well, I also teach research and I supervise graduate students as well to do the research. So part of that is doing research work. So the piece of research that I'm going to talk about at the Soapbox Science is related to infant feeding and breastfeeding.
And that's an extremely relevant topic. We've actually had that topic on the show before, and it's such an important thing for people to learn about. What are some of the things that you're going to be able to share with people that might come up and ask you questions?
Well, one of the things I like to talk about is how amazing breast milk is and how healthy it is for babies and for moms, you know, when breastfeeding is successful. And breast milk is what we call a living substance. So as the baby is drinking milk from the mother's breast, it actually has living cells in it. So things we call white blood cells, which are really important for fighting infection. It also contains microbiome material, which is really important for the baby's immune system as it's developing and for its bowel and its digestion. And it also includes other things which help provide nutrition for the baby and also help the baby build its nervous system, for example, with best types of materials such as protein and fat, which are the building blocks for baby's healthy development.
Right. And also, isn't it true that breastfeeding is good for the mother as well? And of course, not everybody can breastfeed, but for those people that can, it is good for the mother, correct?
Absolutely. So we know moms who breastfeed are less likely to develop cancer later on, including types of breast cancer and ovarian cancer, are less likely to develop type 2 diabetes, and also have less heart disease as well.
Well, that's interesting. And I think a lot of people don't know that, which is such a great event, because somebody can come and ask somebody like yourself, who is tough to get access to sometimes, questions like this. What do you hope this event will accomplish by having such great guests like yourself sharing this information?
Well, I think the research that we do, often we're good at communicating it to other researchers and other health professionals, but maybe not so good at presenting it to the public. And, you know, that's probably the most important audience that we need to spread our information to. So this is a great opportunity to be able to talk, you know, speak one-on-one with people. So I'm really looking forward to it.
That's good. It should have a big impact for folks to hear from yourself. So when the opportunity came to be one of the speakers at this event, why did you feel that was important?
Well, when I saw the invitation come across my email a few months ago, it really tweaked my interest, in particular because it is promoting females and communicating their research. And I think that's really important, especially for, you know, the generation coming up behind me, to show that there are women who are doing research in the university, and that hopefully we can provide some inspiration and some mentorship so that they can see that, you know, they can do this too.
And you've been able to accomplish a lot. I mean, you are a physician, you are a specialist, you are a professor and instructor of the med school. What advice do you give to young women coming up through the world of medicine?
I would say that to go with what your passion is. And for me, because I've always had this interest in pediatrics and child health, it's something that I really love reading about and working in that area. So when you do things that you love to do, then it doesn't even feel like a job sometimes. It's fun. Right. And of course, with any job, there's, you know, good days and bad days. But for the most part, you know, I love my job. And I'm also a curious person. So when I see a problem that is presented to me in my clinical work, then I try and read about it and I see, well, you know, is there already a solution out there for this? Do we already know the answer? And then that's great if we do. But if we don't, then that really drives me then to try and, you know, answer those questions. And again, because I really am interested in it and I love it, then it becomes much easier. I also surround myself with other people who are like-minded. And so when you're working together like that as a team, you know, trying to accomplish something, that makes it, again, really fun, but also really worthwhile as well.
That's right. And this might be a tough question for you, but I can't help but ask, but what's the most fulfilling part of your job?
Aside from the clinical stuff, because, you know, helping families and children get through their symptoms and illnesses, obviously that's very rewarding. That's probably the most rewarding piece of work that I do. But when it comes to the research, working with students, so I have, I would say, at least a dozen students who are either medical students, residents, or graduate students who are working on their own research careers, and helping them with their projects and seeing them succeed, that is extremely fulfilling. And that's what I like the most, I think, is mentoring the students.
Excellent. Well, having a great supervisor is a huge part of the process for any students. They'd be lucky to have you. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us today, and have a great time at the event this weekend.
Thank you so much.
Well, that was Dr. Leanne Newhook. When we come back, we'll talk with cancer expert Dr. Sevtap Savas about why she wanted to participate in this Soapbox Science event. We'll be right back.
Saturday morning, join us for the Irish Newfoundland Show. Send your request to irishnl@vocm.com or submit them online at vocm.com.
Welcome back. We're joined by Dr. Sevtap Savas, who's a cancer researcher in the Division of Biomedical Sciences in the Faculty of Medicine. She shares some of the interesting and extremely relevant work she does in the field of cancer. She also shares some helpful advice for those looking to forge a path in science just like her. But I'll let her tell you that. Let's get to our chat with Dr. Savas. Hi, Dr. Savas. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Mike. How is it going?
It's going great. It's going great. Tell me a bit about what you're going to be talking about, Soapbox Science event.
Right. So we have this wonderful event, Soapbox Science in St. John's. So we have a number of different speakers, and I will be speaking mostly about the topic that I'm interested in, which is cancer. So the title of my talk is Cancer and Us. I am going to address any questions visitors may have, and also try to, you know, tell about science, cancer research, what we do, etc. So I'm really looking forward to that. It's a great, great opportunity for everyone to exchange knowledge and experience.
Well, I think you're going to be a popular speaker because so many of us have been touched by cancer. I lost my father to cancer. I've been involved with the Canadian Cancer Society. So what are some of the things that people could come up and ask you and learn from you at the event?
Right. So, I think I don't know anyone who's not touched by cancer, either personally or a loved one has been lost or went through the treatment and diagnosis, or a bunch of cancer related experiences. So there are a couple of things I think we need to say. The first thing is, how common is this disease? And whenever I say this, a lot of people are just shocked, but the current estimates for Canadian population is that almost 50% of us will hear the following words: you have cancer. 50% is a huge number. So this information per se, I think itself should be very valuable for us to keep in our minds. And the second thing, if it's so common, why is it so common? And I also want to throw this in: among all Canadian provinces, Newfoundland and Labrador, unfortunately, has a little bit higher risk of developing cancer. We don't know the reasons. There might be a variety of different reasons, from environmental factors to social determinants of health. But since it's common, then how can we really protect ourselves from this disease? Because let's face it, nobody wants to get this disease. Nobody wants any of our loved ones, family, friends, children, parents, et cetera, or neighbors, you know, get this disease. So how can we protect ourselves from cancer? There are a couple of things maybe we can keep in our minds, right? Because it's 50% is a huge risk, and nobody wants to get this disease. So how can we really protect ourselves? I think first thing first is to know that this risk is really high. And second, talk to our, you know, medical doctors, etc., because I think the best medical advice can come from them. But I can say as a scientist that I think it's important to be aware of the cancer risk factors. There are a number of viruses, there are a number of environmental factors such as smoking or occupational and other exposures. For example, if you are working in a mine, things may be different for someone who is not. So it's about being informed about your risk as well as what causes, what contributes to this disease and what can I do to actually limit this. So it's important to be aware of these risk factors and talk to our physicians about them. The second thing is, sometimes there isn't much you can do about it. I mean, if you have a hereditary condition, right, your risk is there, but you can still manage it. Mm-hmm. So I think the next point is very important for that one. If you know your risk, then, you know, there are, and even if you don't know it, right, there are a number of ways that you can limit cancer. The first and most important one is screening programs. So these are clinical programs, for example, colonoscopy, mammography, cervical cancer screening. Please, please take advantage of these programs, which are designed to help limit or reduce your cancer risk. So these are offered by our health authorities. And some of them even don't even require a referral. For example, if you're a woman in Newfoundland and Labrador, you can self-refer yourself to a breast screening clinic. If you're 50, how great is that? You know, there are other programs for colon cancer as well. And these are free programs. So, know your risk, know how to, you know, maybe help to reduce your risk and then take advantage of the screening programs, because sometimes whatever you do, you may not be able to reduce your risk. That means that why don't we actually take advantage of other ways, such as screening programs, to catch it early or sometimes even prevent it. Mm-hmm. And cancer, when diagnosed early, is often have a very good prognosis, survival experiences, and so on. So yeah. I really would like everyone to keep this in their minds.
That's right. And the other thing, if this is a health and wellness show, we're always educating people on how to stay as strong and as healthy as you can be. So if you ever are given a prognosis such as cancer, you can be as strong as you can be going to fight that battle, because it's a tough fight for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
So this is an important event, not only to share information like you just shared, but also because it brings awareness to some of the disparities that exist for women in research. So tell me about why that was important for you, because I know you're a very established researcher, very well respected in the field, but, you know, tell me about that road and what some of the challenges women face when they're looking at going into the world of research.
So I think I can make two different points. The first one is already known by research, and the second one is my own experience. All right. So what is known by research is that, yes, female or women scientists are a little bit disadvantaged. CIHR, Canadian Institute of Health Research, did even a study itself. And, you know, in leadership position, female or women applicants get less funded than male applicants. So this really says something. In terms of scientific publications and citations, which is really important in the scientific world and academic, you know, achievements, etc., we do see a similar pattern as well. So you kind of keep thinking, why is that? Why being a woman or a female is actually disadvantaging you? I have no answers to you, but I'm just saying this is a research that shows that there is something going on. And I think at the government level, this was also kind of recognized because we have a legislation that focuses on equity, right? So if you have, for example, two applicants for the same job, but if they are equally, you know, qualified, then you may want to choose the applicant who has got the acuity deserving characteristics, for example. So that says that it's been actually going on for a very long time. It's been recognized. And there are, you know, measures to actually limit the bias against women. And my own experience, I mean, let me tell you, I'm Turkish originally, right? I didn't know about sexism or difficulties of female scientists until I come to Canada. Mm. My family never distinguished between, my, you know, boys and girls. We had, you know, my sister and I both had post-secondary education. All my professors in molecular biology and genetics department that I got my master's and PhD were female. Our normal was like, hey, you know, women are actually at high levels. They are teaching us. We learn from them and they know so much. And, you know, the culture makes a difference, right? So to me, then I went to USA for my postdoctoral studies, and then I realized there is a racism, very eye-opening. And then I moved to Canada 3 years after that, and I realized there is sexism in academia. And to me, then you kind of realize, like, honestly, these are United States and Canada, these are developed countries. You don't expect this to happen, but it's happening. So as a society, we need to think really carefully what's happening here, because I am not different than you are, or you are not different than me in terms of our abilities, even though the types of abilities may be different.
That's right.
So yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. The saying is equal but not the same. But in our case, you are smarter than me. So
No.
But it has nothing to do with it. But it has
no, I don't accept this kind of stuff. But so one thing I need to really add, when I came to job interview of the memorial, one thing that really struck me was that the large number of female faculty members at dean, associate dean, vice dean positions. This institution really, really impressed me at that time. So we have to see those as well. I think it's not always bad, but sometimes it just takes extra effort and extra time. And I think this is not right. We are equal. We might be different, but I don't think we are less than each other. So
agreed.
It's diversity. Awesome.
That's excellent. And, you know, it's such an interesting perspective, learning and studying in other parts of the world and then coming to North America, the US and Canada. So what, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this. I'm asking all the guests this. What advice do you have for young researchers, in particular, young women researchers that are coming up through the ranks?
A couple of things. If, like somebody asked me earlier, if you can say one thing, and I say, it needs to be more than one thing, because first, believe in yourself. Second, never let anyone to say, oh, you are a woman, you are a girl, you can't do that. Absolutely, never buy this. This is not correct. This is incorrect. And you are capable of doing anything you want. And this applies to all boys, girls, men, all genders. And second, have objectives. So you have to have some aims. If you don't know where you are going, you can end up anywhere. And honestly, I really reached some success in this way as well. But having an objective is also very important. So I think, you know, what is it that you want to do? Have a plan, have an aim, and evaluate that plan time to time. Because I will also say that sometimes it's okay to quit because something is not working.
Mm-hmm. That's a great
life
point.
So life is all about, you know, assessing, adapting, changing. And if you need to quit that particular path, but move on to something else, because now there is a, you know, more opportunity somewhere else, don't be scared of this. This is also okay. And surround yourself with the people with the same mind. I think it's really familial. Peer and university or school cultures are so important. They should be like, you know, you can do this. We will give you the support you need, because honestly, I'm over 50. I still need support because I haven't lived everything in life. So we all need that. But eventually you are the boss of your life. So be confident, never give up reaching your aims, even though you may need to, you know, give up certain or quit certain ways that prevents you from reaching those. So just think about this. Don't let anyone, you know, say you can't do that, because we all are capable of doing so much.
So that's some fantastic advice. I'm sure people are going to learn a ton from you at the event as well. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. I had so much fun, and I'm looking forward to doing this again and again. Thank you.
You are definitely going to be on again, especially when we highlight certain forms of cancer. I look forward to seeing you again. I look forward to seeing you at school this semester.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you to all of our inspiring and amazing guests today for their time. Also, thank you to the Soapbox Science event organizers for bringing these and the other trailblazing female and non-binary researchers to the forefront of their field. Their advice and career paths can help show the next generation of women scientists, and all scientists for that matter, the incredible impact you can make when you do something you love and have the passion and enthusiasm to overcome obstacles. Well, that's our show today. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Wall. We'll see you back here next week for another episode of the Wellness and Healthy Lifestyle Show on your VOCM.